You're listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. My name is Lynn, and today I am giving a presentation to a mom's group at a local church, and we are going to just do question and answer as they come up. I'm going to give you information. Feel free to just shout out whatever you want to ask, and we'll see how this goes. I haven't done a radio show this way before, and we'll find out if people like it, and if they don't, they're just too bad. So, Stop Feeding the Predators is a nonprofit organization for people who were sexually assaulted when they were children, regardless of their age today. And I emphasize regardless of their age today because I have talked to people that were in their 20s, and it just happened to them, you know, when they were in their teens. And I've also spoken with people that were in their 80s, and it happened to them when they were like elementary school, kindergarten grades. So how old you are doesn't matter. So if anybody ever says, oh, you were sexually assaulted, why don't you get over it? That was a long time ago. It doesn't matter how long ago it was. You know, a death of someone, a traumatic fire in your home, you know, if your kitten explodes, you're going to remember that for your whole entire life. I don't care if you're 99 years old on your deathbed, you're going to still retain the trauma of what happened. First off, I'll tell you, I was raped when I was 3, and off and on throughout my childhood by different people that came into my life. It was never a stranger. It was never somebody that I didn't know comfortably. It was always someone that I was told I could trust, someone that was around a lot. These were people that, you know, just like every family has, you know, oh, there's cousin so-and-so and uncle so-and-so and neighbor so-and-so. And these were just a normal family. It's not like, you know, we were trolloping people through the house constantly that we didn't know. It was people I knew. And I thought God hated me. Now keep in mind, 3-year-old mentality, I still have a lot of that today. Keeps me interesting. But I thought God hated me because of all the people that hurt me. I knew there's no way God could like me because I was such a bad person that I let these things happen to me. There must be something about me that makes people want to do this. So I didn't go to church, and when I was with my friends when I was older as a teenager, they would need to go to the church to pick up their mom or their brother or whatever, and I wouldn't go in. Absolutely terrified to go in. I knew if I walked in that church door, didn't matter if it was, you know, like a mom's group room off to the side or the actual sanctuary, I knew I was going to burst into flames and be gone. I just knew God hated me that much. And that's a horrible place to have in your heart, to think that God hates you. Because reality is, God hates the sin that was done to me. He didn't hate me. And he didn't even hate the people doing it. He hated the sin that they were doing to me. God and I got it worked out. We're square. But I think it's important to tell that to people because I have a very strong faith in my life. And Stop Feeding the Predators is not about God. You know, everything that I do in my life is about God, and that's why I do Stop Feeding the Predators. But Stop Feeding the Predators is not about God any more than Kroger is about baking. Okay, it's a place you go to get what you need. You know, what you do with it is the rest. But I hated God, and I knew he hated me. And if anybody had said, I'm sorry for what you've been through, if you come to me, I know God can heal you, I would have said, go away. I would have never talked to them again. I would have alienated them from my life because I knew intuitively in my heart and soul, I knew how much I was hated by God. You can't help people if you approach them with something that they feel is not in their best interest. You know, if I'm in a room full of cat lovers and I start forcing my dog on everyone, you guys are going to never invite me back. So I tell people, Stop Feeding the Predators is not about religion and it's not about selling anything. I do what I do because the 3-year-old me deserves some help. The child that I was didn't deserve to go through what I went through. And if I can help other kids not go through that, if I can prevent it with passing on knowledge, or if I can help stop it because it's already happened and now parents say, oh my gosh, you know, I see it, I owe it to me to help other people. I also want to say, if anyone in here was sexually assaulted, raped, molested, abused, and I use all those different words because I never thought that I was raped. I just thought that people did mean things to me. So if you would have asked me, you know, 7, 8 years old, have you ever been raped? I would have said no. It doesn't matter if somebody is shot, if someone else is stabbed, or somebody else is bludgeoned with a brick. You can see that all of that needs healing. And it doesn't matter what happened, it all needs healing. So I don't care if you use the word rape, abuse, molested, touched, inappropriate, whatever the phrasing, the bottom line is, if somebody did something to you and you didn't like it and they shouldn't have done it, you have to find healing from that. Simple enough. I did write down everything I was going to say, so I'm trying to make sure I get it all covered. I also have people who say, well, I was drinking when I was a teenager and my uncle did this, or, you know, I was out with some girlfriends and had a few too many beers and one of the girlfriends got inappropriate with me, but it was my fault because I was out and had... And I recently came up with this and I finally washed it off the back of my hand. How many of you have a car? Okay. How many of you have ever gotten in the car knowing that your gas tank is real close to empty, but you think you can make it to the store and back, and you don't want to stop and get gas, you just want to go to the store and get back home and be done? How many of you ever driven when the car's like, yeah, that's like my common mode. Let's say you're in your car and you've taken it out many times, low on gas, gotten back home, never had a problem. This time you're low on gas, you head out, and somebody starts shooting at your car. Some maniac, I mean, we hear it all the time in the news, some maniac starts shooting at your car. Okay, being shot at in the car and having a low gas gauge have nothing to do with each other, except that having a low gas gauge could impair your ability to get away from the shooter. Does that make sense? So I don't care if you have a glass of wine, if you have 40 glasses of wine, shouldn't be driving whether your car is empty or not. But the point is, being under the influence of something, whether it's legal or not, has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not somebody's shooting at your car. Except that it impairs your ability to get away, to notice it before it's too awful. Okay? So if you or anyone you know was sexually assaulted, hurt in any way, and they blame themselves, you tell them the little low gas story. Okay? Because they're not related, but it does affect your ability to see it and get away from it. Does that make sense? Okay. May I borrow you for a moment? You have to stand a bit?
Yeah.
How many of you are touchy people when you're talking to somebody, you just touch them and friends? No? See, I'm not either. Even with my own kids, I might stand really close or whatever, but I'm not really a toucher. And with my hands being wickedly cold, I apologize in advance. But there are some people that... May I touch your shoulder? Okay. I already did anyway. I'm sorry. I touched it again. All right. So some people, when you talk to them, they touch your shoulder, and, you know, it's nice and it's friendly, and they love you, and they're just trying to make a point. And they're saying, oh, you know, honey, how you been? That kind of thing. And then there's other times when somebody will touch your shoulder, and... it's just a little weird. Is anyone really weirded out right now? The difference is the intent behind the touch. This is critical to teaching our kids how to protect themselves. And this is critical as parents in knowing when to protect our kids. So if your kid says, you know, I'm just going to use a random name, Uncle Bob touched my shoulder. Okay, if Uncle Bob was just touching her shoulder and talking to her, and it wasn't a big deal, you'd have never heard about it. But if Uncle Bob was touching her shoulder, and it made her feel uncomfortable, I'm going to really creep out this room, right? That's why your child is telling you. Nobody cares if somebody just kind of, you know, it doesn't even register. It's so common. How many of you ever been in the grocery store and had someone walk past and say, excuse me, you don't remember that stuff. But if somebody walks past you in the grocery store and they're like, excuse me, hon, that stays with you. You're like, ew, right? It's how our gut reacts.
Thank you.
See, welcome. I told you they're cool.
I know, yeah.
But our gut reacts. A lady that I've spoken with, and she's given me permission to share this, she was pre-verbal, which means as a baby she couldn't even speak yet. She does not remember every diaper change, but she does remember her aunt sexually assaulting her. Okay? Think about it. It's the same body part as a diaper change, but she doesn't remember every diaper change. She remembers the assaults. Because intuitively, even as infants, our guts react to creepiness, to evil, whatever you want to call it. And as parents, we have to trust our own gut. And we have to empower our kids to trust their gut. We talked a little bit about what mom's group wanted to hear about. You know, what do we need to know to help protect our kids? And the biggest thing is, I give all of you moms permission to do anything that you feel is appropriate to protect your kids. I give you permission. If somebody's just off, trust your gut. You know, I did the creepy shoulder touch one time, and I think there were maybe 120 people there. And I was talking to them, and there was a gentleman that he and I had been kind of flirting earlier. I called him up on the stage and asked him if I could touch his shoulder, and he said sure. And so I've got my hand on his shoulder, and I'm just kind of talking to him. And then I take my hand off, and I'm talking to everybody, and then I put my hand back on his shoulder, like what I just did. And the whole audience stopped watching me and were watching my hand and his face. Because the whole audience felt it. 100-some people, you know, however many feet away that is they were, they still reacted to that. So if you're thinking, you know, there's that one neighbor. I mean, nicest guy ever, but just, I don't know. Trust it, okay? Because what's the worst that can happen is you offend that neighbor, but you protect your kid. That's the worst that happens. I mean, I would hope any one of you would feel free to offend me if you thought it would protect your kids. You know? You have to talk with your kids. When I was in school, there was a teacher who said, I'd like to talk with you later. And then all the other teachers said, I want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to anybody that wants to talk to me, but I'm going to go talk to that lady that wants to talk with me, and I didn't really like her. But she always said, I want to talk with you, which means she welcomed whatever I had to say back. And that was so cool. And I want you to think about your children. Pick up your socks. Where's your coat? Did you get your homework? Did you let the dog out? Did you close the bathroom door so the dog doesn't go in? I mean, whatever it is we pummel our children with day after day, it's important that we communicate with them. It's important that we take those times where we just sit down and say, how was your day today? And listen to what they say. If they say, it's fine, Mom, I don't want to talk. You say, oh, well, if you ever do want to talk, let me know. Because as a mom, I get kind of lonesome sometimes. You know, I miss talking to you guys. You're going to grow up and be gone, and I'm going to miss it. And it helps kids know that they're important to you. I know it seems silly. We get so busy. And I personally, I've raised 5 kids. My youngest is now 21, and my oldest is almost 32. I'm asking, 31, 32?
I'll be 31 this year.
31 this year. I missed it. I was so busy, initial years, I was so busy trying to do it right that, you know, floors are vacuumed once a week. I mean, really, once a week? I'm like, oh my God, I'm lucky to do it once a month now. You know, dinner was on the table every night at 6 o'clock. if somebody else did it, because if I did it, it was, you know, between 4 and 9:30 is we're having dinner. I don't know when we're having dinner. I don't know what we're having. That's why sometimes it's 9:30 before we order the pizza, because I've surrendered to the fact I don't know what we're having for dinner. And lots of people say it goes so fast. I don't even remember most of it. I have to ask my kids about times when they were growing up, because I don't remember it. If we take more time with our kids and we spend more time communicating with our kids, we remember more of it. I remember stupid things that me and my kids did, but I don't remember most of what me and my kids did. But the kids remember things that I didn't know were important to them. Do you? I don't know if you are willing to share my... For the radio people, one of my children is here today, so do you want to share one of the things that you remember?
Like the stickers under the sandwiches thing that I told you about, and you said, I did that? I wouldn't do that. So she made peanut butter and jelly one day, which happened all the time, and she always gave it to us on a plate, and, you know, and she'd cut it into triangles, you know, and... The one day it was cut into four triangles, and we picked up the first one, and under it was a little sticker. And under the next one was a different sticker. And mine were Muppet Babies. I don't remember what the other kids were. But it was like a surprise. It was so cool. It was exciting. And she took that time, and it cost her an extra, what, 6 seconds. But she made that fun. And when I told her about it a couple years ago, I said, remember when you did stuff like that? I try to do little things like that to surprise the kids so they know I was thinking about them, even when they weren't standing right in front of me. And, you know, and she gave us the lunch and went to do something else. It was like, oh, and then I have to go nurse the youngest, or she had to do something else. But she was there with us in that moment, even though she was still busy trying to clean up and do all the things. And I told her about it a couple years ago, and she's like, I wouldn't have done that. I did that.
Stickers, those are dirty. Did I wash them first? I put stickers under your food? Who knows who touched those? You know, I'm germaphobe here. So radio-wise, I don't know if that came out, but Elisa was talking about that I had put stickers underneath the kids' sandwiches. So I don't know how sound-wise, I don't know how it's going to travel.
Yeah.
I'll worry about it later. You know, if you missed the story, maybe you should have been at mom's group, right? One of the things that I remember of my kids growing up is I remember it was right after Halloween, and I couldn't figure out what to have for dinner, and I went ahead and put plates and stuff on the table. And I was like, you know what? The kids don't even care. I could just give them candy and they wouldn't care. So we put candy on their plates, and I think we put suckers in the glasses instead of a beverage. So their whole, you know, plate and glass and everything was just loaded with candy. And we called them down for dinner, and you would have thought that Santa Claus was on fire in the middle of the dining room. Those children did not know what to do. They just stood there dumbfounded.
It's a trick. Nobody eats.
Don't take the bait. They wouldn't go near it. They just stared at us like, what's going on? You know? But I remember that. I remember their look. I remember the silliness. I remember the stupidness. And then I remember them saying, so are we not having dinner? And I was like, you know what? Take a piece of candy. We'll figure out. And I think the kids helped us figure out what we were going to have for dinner. Each of them took a piece of candy or two and went away. And then we, you know, made dinner. But it's moments like that that I remember connecting with my kids. And like you said, stickers under the sandwiches. You said I wasn't even in the room when you guys were having the sandwiches. But think about it. Our kids go to school and they eat the lunches that we make. They don't sit there and think, Mom was thinking about me when she made the sandwich. They think, I have my sandwich. They're in their moment. They're not thinking about what had to happen to lead up to that. I want you to think about sexual assault of your child the same way. I don't want you to wait for that moment when you're in that moment and something's off. I want you to think about what leads up to that moment. Hi, how are you? Your child is beautiful. Oh, hi, sweetie. Oh, I could just eat him up. Are you totally creeped out that I'm pretending to hug your child, even though I'm really not even hugging your child? That's the little things that lead up to it. Don't wait for that moment when a stranger is hugging your child when you see somebody coming up saying, oh, your child's beautiful, say, thank you, I love her. Right?
How do we help our children know that that's a creepy thing, too? Obviously,
They know it.
How do we help them speak out about it?
Okay. First of all, your kids already know it.
Yeah.
When I was raped when I was 3, he didn't threaten me. He didn't bribe me. He didn't use force. He wasn't mean. He just did it. And he didn't say anything about it leading up to it. And he didn't say anything about it afterwards. And I knew it was wrong. Nobody told me it was wrong. Nobody said don't tell. Intuitively, your kids already know. Have you ever seen, I don't know how old children, age-wise, I don't know what span we have here, but have you ever seen your kids go up to an animal of some sort and you're like, oh my God, that animal could bite you, it has the mange, it looks like it's, you know, near death, it smells because it's been laying on the side of the road all week, you know, I don't know, my child just noticed it. Kids will approach things that they feel compassion for, and they will avoid things that their gut tells them to avoid. How many of you have ever dated? You ever had a really good-looking guy approach you, and you're like, no, dude, don't know why, but no. And have you ever had a really kind of, you know, guy that maybe he's lacking in the good looks department, and you're like, what a wonderful man. Now, sometimes we're manipulated because of our past, of what we've been through, and we see things distorted. I can't tell you how many wonderful guys I went out with that were just horrible abusers and addicts. But I stuck with, we were talking the other day, I stuck with what was normal to me. I stuck with what was familiar. Your kids already know intuitively. So if your kid says, I don't like so-and-so, don't automatically assume your child's being assaulted. Just say, why don't you like so-and-so? Well, they never share their suckers with me. All right, so what if I buy you suckers and they have their suckers and then do you like them? Yeah, that'd be all right. Okay, it's a sucker issue. Has nothing to do with the person, right? I don't like so-and-so. Why don't you like them? I don't know. That's that gut. There's something about that child. And it doesn't mean they're being sexually assaulted. It doesn't mean that they're being traumatized when they're with this person. It means there's something about that person that is unsettling to who your child is. Kids with autism or Asperger's don't like to be touched, generally speaking. You and I have conversational distance, you know. If I'm talking to you and I keep getting closer and closer and closer, I mean, it starts getting a little weird and you're like a little bit afraid of what I'm going to do. But see, even though we have a friendly communication, you're still thinking, well, I've seen her touch that girl and she hugged an imaginary child. I don't know what this woman's capable of. But you're fine until a certain point, and then your gut reacts. Our kids have the same thing. Have you ever seen, like, rabbits in a yard where dogs are? And the rabbits know that dog's not going to bother me. That dog lives here. It barks its head off, but it's not coming near me. They know this dog chases me, but only this far in the fence, and then I'm good. And then there's other times, a rabbit will see a dog, it'll take off running, never come back. Because animals intuitively know what's safe. Kids are the same way. We teach our kids about their bodies. And I always say, if you're not comfortable talking to your children about sex, they're never going to disclose to you if something happens to them. Use real words. Have you, any of you ever taught your kids how to brush their teeth? Did they know where their teeth were when you started talking to them about teeth? Okay. Unless you're living in a cave, your children already know pretty much where boobs are. So you can call them boobs, breasts, you know, whatever. Mammary glands. I don't know. Is that little things inside? I don't know. But your kids already have a pretty good idea of where things are. You just have to teach them, the same as brushing their teeth, the same as making sure they get all of their bottom washed, the same as making sure they get the top of their head scrubbed when they're washing their hair, and not just the edges. Kids already know body parts. Use real words, penis, vagina, you know. I remember my mom used to say to me, and this is like graphic for radio here, My mom used to say to me, you know, did you wipe your butt? Yeah. Okay. Did you wash your face? Yeah. Did you wash all over? That's pretty vague. I'm not sure what all over means. Does she mean the bathroom walls while I was in there? Because all over can mean all kinds of things. You know, she meant my armpits. My mom had a problem saying, did you wash your armpits? Because I guess to her that was a little too personal. So I smelled. Because, you know, the bathroom walls were clean, but armpits didn't get it. I washed all over. But think about the terms that we use when we talk to our kids. You have to say things that children understand. And kids don't have the 20 or so years of knowledge that you guys have. So keep it simple. Did you wash between your toes? Yeah, Mom, I did. Okay, good. You know, did you wash down the bathroom walls? No. All right, well, that's fine. You can skip it this time. Hit it next week. But again, communicating with your kids is critical. I don't know, and I'll pick on you again. Since my kid's in the room, I get to pick on her again. Can you think of, and if you can't, it's fine, because I'm trying to think of, can you think of any time when I told you something that made no sense whatsoever? And I'm not talking about the years when I had the brain damage. I had brain damage for 9 years and 8 months, and I got words for things wrong, so I would tell my kids to go get a spoon when I meant, you know, go to bed, and just, it was all over the place. But not talking about those years. As you were little growing up, were there things that I told you that didn't make sense to you? I'm not saying I'm perfect and I communicated right. Most of what I'm telling you is because I see how I did it wrong, and I see how that's affected my kids, and I see what I should have done. So it's that hindsight's 20/20, so let me teach you so that...
No, I can't think of... I have a good story for a kid not understanding. I told Michael that when a roll was empty, we needed to...
I'm just making sure that we can hear it. Go ahead.
I told my son when the roll was empty, we need to make sure we put the new toilet paper on the roll. And we all understand that means replace the roll. And I realize he's in the bathroom for about 10 minutes. Like, this isn't normal. Is he okay? Is he playing? And he was like 5 at the time. And I go in and he is pulling off lengths of toilet paper from the new roll and trying to wrap them around the old roll. And it was adorable and sweet, but then I realized that my language of this is good enough, like we just put it on, wasn't clear to his thinking. That's
cool. But that gives you a good idea. I mean, most of the silly things our kids do is a result of us not being clear about what we wanted. I'm trying to think. I don't know, sex talk-wise, I don't know that I had a specific sex talk with my kids, because in our family, you know, Dad went to jail for touching a child inappropriately. The kids all knew, you know, Daddy hurt your sister, he's going away because he's in trouble because you're not allowed to do that to people. And then individually, the kids and I would talk based on what was age-appropriate of more of what happened. Again, kids don't need graphic details. Shot, stabbed, or bludgeoned. It all needs help. You know, doesn't matter if somebody shot you, stabbed you, or bludgeoned you with a brick. They shouldn't have. Doesn't matter what they did. It matters that they shouldn't have, and they need to go away, and you should be protected. I have no idea where I was going.
Well, can I back you up anyways?
Yes.
Because when we were talking about kids have that gut instinct to, and they say, I don't like so-and-so, or I don't want to be around this person, or, you know, Uncle Bob touched my shoulder, or whatever. Can you talk a little bit about the ways that we're teaching them to not listen to that?
Okay.
I feel like we kind of skipped the rest of that section.
Okay. Has anybody in here ever watched TV?
Yes.
Have you ever seen a commercial where they were trying to get you to buy something?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever seen a commercial where they said, you need this pen. You need this pen. You need it now. I'm going to tell you that you need this pen. Use it. Get to it. What's your problem?
More or less, yes.
And do you buy that pen?
No.
Because it's obnoxious.
Right.
So when we say, I know that you're hungry. I know you haven't eaten today. I know you have to eat. Have any of you ever had times where you were thinking, you know what, I haven't eaten all day, but I don't even care. I want to get this done. I want to go to bed. Your child will survive if they don't eat one day. And yeah, they might be up at midnight saying, Mom, I'm really hungry. Okay, have a banana and go back to bed. But when we tell our kids what they're feeling, we limit their ability to feel it genuinely. When we tell them, you have to eat, I don't know, what do kids being forced to eat nowadays? Candy
vegetables.
Bars?
Huh?
Vegetables. Well, see, I was mostly broke when I was raising my kids, and we'd go to the store together, and they used to ask me if we could get broccoli. I don't think my kids ever asked me if we could buy candy bars, because they knew if I had the money, we were buying candy bars. That was an automatic. But they would ask specifically, can we get broccoli? Because I didn't make them eat it. I made broccoli and I ate it, and they said, that looks good, can I have some? And I'm like, ugh, there's not much here. If you have to have a bite, I guess. But when we tell our kids they have to eat something, okay, even saying you have to try it. You know what? This water's really good. You have to try this. You have to try this. I wiped my germs off. You have to try this. Just a sip. Just a sip. You have to try it. You're like, no, and not only no, but now I kind of don't like you right now. When we force our kids to do things that they don't want, we make them go against that gut. If I'm sitting there and I'm eating Brussels sprouts, which apparently smell like feet while they're cooking.
And while you eat them.
And while you eat them. If I'm sitting there eating Brussels sprouts and I am just, oh, these are so good. I really like them when they're just the perfect temperature, not too hot, not too cold. Your kids are going to want it. They're going to come up and say, what are you eating? And you'll say, oh, I don't know if you'd like it or not. It's Brussels sprouts. It smells bad, Mom. I know. It smells terrible, doesn't it? It smells like feet. It's awful. But you know what? I like them. I don't know why. Your kids are more likely to say, can I have like a little one to see if I like it? Than if you say, here, this smells like feet. I want you to eat it. I want you to put this horrible smelling thing in your mouth, and I want you to tell me how great of a cook I am. Your husbands, boyfriends, parents, aunts, uncles, nobody wants that, you know? You can say, this is what I'm eating, let me know if you want to try one. You know, if you go to a potluck party, there's always that one person going, oh, you should have more of this. You know what, I don't even like how that looks. But you don't want to offend them, so you say, oh yeah, I'll try a spoonful of that later, I'm my plate's full now, and you leave, even though you're starving and you really wanted three more things. You're the marketing team for your kids. The harder you push, the more they're going to buy the competitor's brand. You know? It's how we present to our kids.
The hellos and goodbyes to family. And
yeah, when my daughter had her child, we weren't close. I mean, we didn't live near each other, and I had things going on in my life, and she had things going on in her life. We weren't around each other a lot. And the first couple times, she was wanting her child to connect with me, and she'd say, they call me ma'am, she would say, you know, go give ma'am a hug. And I said, or you can wave bye, or you can blow me a kiss, what do you want to do? And now that child runs to me, grabs hold of me, gives me this bear hug that I can't get out of, whether I want it or not, whether I'm ready for it or not. And her other kids are the same way, you know, it's say goodbye. And then let your child decide how that is. When we all leave here today, I want all of you to hug each other before you leave. It's not my place, you know? And some of you don't know each other like that, and some of you don't want to hug each other like that because maybe there have been some things that's been said, and you know, you know. I want everybody to say goodbye to each other when they leave. Well, that's doable. You can wave, you can go, you know, whatever you want. Allow your children to be who they are. I think parents that have children with Asperger's and autism or Down syndrome or any kind of noted medical change to that child, I think some of those parents can be, and I'm not slamming the rest of us, can be better parents because they learn what their children need. And they learn their limitations, and they allow them to be who they are. I mean, doesn't mean that you don't want your kid to still be a rocket scientist who discovers a cure for cancer and drunk drivers. But they allow their children to be who they are more than the rest of us, because we have high hopes and we have expectations and we have, oh my gosh, you know, you could be so much more. Well, telling a child you can be so much more implies they're not enough already. You know, and I remember when I was a little kid and I would hear about children that would, you know, car accident or what, a fire or whatever, I would hear children that had died. And as a child, I was always crushed because I thought they never got to be a person. So here's a nice morbid thought for everyone. I pray this doesn't happen. If any of our children died tomorrow, did they die with us waiting for them to be who we wanted them to be, or did they die with us loving who they were? And I can tell you firsthand, I am guilty of waiting for my kids to grow up because I was overwhelmed. It was five kids in me, and I felt I didn't stand a chance, and the faster they could drive and get out on their own, the less I was on the hook for stuff. You know, things happen every day. And when we empower our kids to be who they are, we were talking about children that have like different levels of normalcy. And we think nothing of, you know, a husband, boyfriend, or our parents, whatever, has to have a cup of coffee before they get their day started. We don't think anything of that. Well, what about a child who has to watch 10 minutes of cartoons in the morning to feel normal? Or the child who has to pet the cat after they brush their teeth, not before, because that didn't count. I have to brush my teeth and then pet the cat. You know, let kids have their thing that helps them to feel normal. When I was little, it made me nuts to have one sock and one shoe on and the other foot be empty. I had to put socks on first, and then I had to put shoes on, and that made me normal. And my mom would be in a hurry to help me, and she was having to tie my shoes, so she'd put my sock on, put my shoe on, and then go to the other foot. Oh, it made me nuts. And there's nothing wrong with the way she did it. It's just, for me, I needed it this way. I needed normalcy. And to me, it wasn't normal to have a shoe and a sock on one foot and nothing on the other foot. So does anybody have anything to share about your kids? And
well, I have a question. Mm-hmm. So taking that normalcy, my son is four, my daughter is 19 months, so we're not going to address it quite yet. But, well,
she already has the gut.
Well, so how do I teach, make it normal to talk to him? Like, how do I make sure that he has that gut.
Mm-hmm.
How do I verbally say it's not okay for someone to touch you this way and this way?
When I touched her shoulder, there's nothing wrong with somebody touching your shoulder.
Right.
But the second way I touched it was creepy to her.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you tell your child, if anybody ever touches you, any part of your body, whether it's your head, your toes, your nose, if anybody touches your body and you don't feel okay with it, I want you to let me know. When I was growing up, there was good touch, bad touch, and I think they still use a little bit of that now. They say, oh, kids understand what you mean by good touch, bad touch. Well, when I was rubbing her shoulder, as much as her guts creeped out, maybe she liked having her shoulder rubbed. Maybe that felt kind of good, you know? Can you do the neck, you know? And when I was raped and such throughout my childhood, sex feels good. So don't confuse your kids by saying, if anybody ever touches you in a way that you don't like, because that will confuse them. Say, if anyone touches you in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable. Okay? Or if somebody touches you and you think it's weird, and you're again empowering them to decide what's weird. She might have been perfectly okay with me touching her shoulder in a creepy way because she's used to people touching her shoulder in a creepy way.
Most
and
specifically
that's not weird.
You in presentations, but
always in presentations. But it's the words that we use with our kids is so critical to what they hear. You know, put more toilet paper on the roll. means wrap more toilet paper around that empty cardboard roll that's hanging there.
The poor kid burst into tears when I said,
oh, he didn't stand a chance.
And yeah. He said, how does it work? He was so stressed because he kept trying and trying and it would fall off. And
he's just trying to accommodate what mom told him.
Right.
You know? I was trying to think of other example-wise.
We talked the other day again about kids have, in our eyes, little stresses, but to them it's big stresses, and so if we can be there for that, then they'll feel more open to share those big stresses of, I didn't like standing with this person, or XYZ.
Right, right. If your kid's having whether they're having a good day or a bad day, get them to share with you how they're feeling, what they're feeling, and then don't just leave it at that. Ask them more, you know? Why did you feel that way? Remember when they were little and they asked us why about everything and we hated it? You know what? That is the best place in the world to be. Kids want to know why. Why should I tell you if somebody touches me and I don't like it? Because somebody might hurt you and I don't want anybody to hurt you. Okay.
And we, in my house, we talk about God made my body for me and the person that I marry someday. So God made their body for them. No one else has a right to do anything to their body. If they want to share a hug with someone, that's their right to share a hug, but no one's allowed to take a hug because it's their body.
Right, right. And it's not a hug if somebody takes it from you.
Right. I have a question. So in our lives, there's not a single person that I can think of that would abuse my children.
I might.
So, but no. I'm not giving you access to them, really. And granted, they're in there. But how do I, since the majority, I don't know if you put the percentage on here, but I know that the majority of sexual assaults or abuse or whatever are people that you know or the child knows or whatever. So if there is not a single person in my life, like I'm thinking about them, that I'm giving access to my child without me being there, that I feel would do that. How do you, if there is someone, how do you figure out, do you have any way of figuring out? Like, it just, you know, does that make, do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Because my sisters, it wasn't me, my sister was abused by her step-grandfather. We were more than welcome at our grandparents' house, you know, we were over there sleepovers all the time, but I don't think my mom thought that our step-grandfather would be the person, you know, because it was a trusting right. person. So, yeah, how do you figure that out? Yeah.
When I was 13, I was raped by my grandfather, who was, at the time, 70-some years old. He never drank. He never made inappropriate jokes. He never made inappropriate sexual comments. He never stood too close to me. He never creepy-touched my shoulder. To this day, I say that he would have never raped me. And he did. And if he hadn't confessed to it, I don't know that I'd be doing what I'm doing today, because I probably would have killed myself. Because he raped me and I told my mom and she didn't believe me. And she called him and he admitted to it. And she told me, if he had not admitted to it, I never would have believed you and I would have sent you away. So when you're saying there's nobody that you can think of that would have done that, growing up, our house was the house that everybody loved my husband. All the neighbors loved him, and they thought I was an absolute witch because he was the one that was didn't mind if the kids played in the yard. He didn't care if a ball went in the yard. He'd throw it back into their yard. Nice guy, waved and said hi, would talk to you about your yard, talk to you about your house. Just an all-around great guy. College graduate, I'm a high school dropout, you know. He's the one making all the money, paying all the bills. I'm just that lady who stays at home. People didn't like me. And when they found out that he was raping my kids, a lot of them, there's one neighbor in particular to this day is still quite angry with me because she believes I knew it was going on the whole time. Okay, I'm a high school dropout, but I'm smart enough to know you don't sexually assault children. He's a college-educated guy who figured out how to do it and get away with it for all those years. So when you're saying, what do? Are you going to rape your kids?
No.
Then you're the only one you can trust. Okay. I don't know how to tell you any differently. You know, anybody who has been sexually assaulted, regardless of their age, has a tendency to act out some of the assault later. When I was a child and I was raped, there were other children that I played with in sexual ways, which makes me the aggressor, which means I am capable of sexually assaulting a child. Obviously not now because I'm healed, but that was within me. I know a gentleman who was in prison for raping a teenage girl and got to talking to him and found out that he was raped when he was 4 by his 14-year-old babysitter, female. Now, clearly, 14-year-old female raping a 4-year-old little boy, obviously something has happened to her to make her exhibit this behavior. But now, as a 40-something-year-old man, he loves women, they're beautiful. He's not into children, that's creepy and disgusting. But if he sees a teenage girl, that trigger goes off and he wants his power back. He said his world was wonderful until she did that. He was okay in his skin. He felt okay with himself until somebody took that away from him, and now he wanted his power back.
You said that you played with children in a sexual manner. Was that because of curiosity, or?
I thought that's how you're supposed to play with people, because that's how people were with me.
So I guess that's my biggest fear is the kids are going to get curious, and they're going to be alone, or brother, sister, or whatever. You know, how do you, I mean, I tell, you know, my son and daughter when they're in the bathtub, you know, you don't touch each other, those are your private parts, and, you know, those are for you only, blah, 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 blah. But, I don't know, they go off and play with the boy, the other neighbor kid, or the girl down the street, you know, you're not constantly there. How do you teach them that, the difference between curiosity and having, you know, what I'm trying to ask?
A lot of people make the joke, Mom always said wear clean underwear in case I'm in an accident, but if I'm in an accident, I'm not going to be wearing clean underwear.
Yeah.
They remember that our mom told us that. So moms can say, when you're playing with your friends, keep your clothes on and don't let anybody touch you on or under your clothes.
And then another thing is, you know, I've been teaching my son to use his voice, and so I tell him that, you know, you need to say, I don't like that, or someone, you know. So when I'm around and somebody will hug them or touchy-feely, whatever, you know, and you can tell he's just like, who are you? I don't, you know, creepo. And I'm like, you know, he doesn't like that. I mean, I'm standing up for him. I don't know. Is that, should I just let it be and let him figure it out, or?
No, you need to protect him even before they get that close to him.
Yeah.
I mean, what you're doing is good, saying he doesn't like that, don't do that.
Yeah.
But you also need to, you're the mom, and if you saw your kid walking out into traffic, you would stop him before he got hit by a car, not say, oh, I shouldn't have, you know. It's the same with somebody touching your kid. When I was 3 and I was raped, I was in a room with other children, and there were parents there, upstairs.
And the other children were in the same room as you and your rapist?
Mm-hmm. And...
I would think they would red flag, this is weird.
Yeah, and I was told that I was stupid and I was dumb and I was weird for what I was doing.
The kids said that?
They said that to me. Nobody said anything to the guy that was doing it to me.
Probably
they said it to me.
They were afraid of him, but they recognized that situation made them feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all the more they knew to do with it.
And he was a teenager, so they're not going to tell him he's stupid. I'm the one who's stupid. At least that's how they saw it.
Maybe they just thought that was normal. But
or if they had, he'd done it to them.
Possible. You know? If you know you're not going to hurt your child, then you're the only one that you can trust with your child. I 11 years of marriage, I trusted my husband with my kids. There were things I saw along the way, and I was like, and that's just my issue because of what I went through. or I'm just feeling that way because I didn't have a dad growing up and I'm jealous, and so I think that's not appropriate, but really I'm just jealous because nobody loved me like that. Well, no, I had a whole bunch of people that loved me just like that. You know, I was witnessing the grooming, the getting close to the child, the I haven't picked on you yet, so, you know, oh, you look so nice today, I haven't seen you in a long time, you know, how's your mom, how have you been, you know? And I haven't touched her, I haven't done anything that could be considered inappropriate, but how freaked out are you? Yeah? So, if I said, you know, I was talking to your mom, right? But that's what we have to teach our kids. We just teach them to trust their gut. We're working on a program right now. It's called GIR, Gut Instinct Response Reinforcement. Okay, everybody's already feeling weird, especially you. Laura, right?
Lori.
Everybody's feeling weird already. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to say grr really loud, like you mean it, like a bear. Grr! Do you feel that rumble? Do it again. Grr! Do you feel that uncomfortable rumble? Now,
I come over to you and I just ask you how you're doing. Are you starting to feel that similar rumble?
Hunger doesn't count.
You're cheating.
The reason that we teach kids that, because that's same feeling. When somebody's being creepy to you, your gut reacts, and that grr is the same kind of feeling that your gut gets when somebody's doing something that's weird. You know, if I saw a cat juggling, I would say, Mom, I saw the weirdest thing. Well, yeah, that's pretty weird. If I saw a guy touching himself in the park, that's too weird to tell you. So how do you protect your kid from that? You're at the park with your kid. You're looking around to see if there's a cat juggling anywhere near your child, because that stuff's just weird. We're coming up to the end of time for me. I wanted you guys to have time after I left. I wanted you guys to have time to talk more. So I'm going to crank out the last couple of bits of information, and hopefully it's helpful. And if it's not, call me up and say, you know, that totally didn't help. You got me on this, but then you just blew it with the rest of it. When it comes to your kid's safety, you're it. Sorry to put the pressure on you, ladies, but you're it. Because when they were being formed, you protected them. You allowed them to grow and develop and to be themselves, whoever that was, boy or girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, brown hair, green eyes, whatever. You didn't put any expectations on, you know, you might have said, gosh, I kind of hope it's a girl, but, you know, I don't really care as long as this pregnancy goes quickly and I'm done with this because I'm tired of wearing these big clothes and whatever. But when our babies are growing inside us, we allow them to be who they're going to be. We pray for their safety. We pray for their health. We want them to have a happy life, whoever they are, whatever they look like, no matter what trials they face. Okay, ladies, they're here. You got to have the same expectations. You got to pray for their safety. You got to pray for their health. You got to protect them the best way that you can. And the biggest thing is open communication. If your kids can say, Uncle Bob touched my shoulder, that was weird. He never touched my shoulder before. Well, Uncle Bob probably has touched the kid's shoulder lots of times. It's just this time there was a different intent behind it. You know? Talk to your kids. When we get the GIR thing going a little more, we're kind of at like phase two of it. We came up with it and how to do it, and now we're in the fine tuning and all of that. But I've taken courses through OPATA, which is the Ohio Peace Officer Training Academy. They're the people that teach our police officers and detectives what to do. I've taken Finding Words, which is the actual people that do the interviewing of children who have been assaulted to find out what happened. And one of the things I learned with them, and I give this to you all, did you have a good day, a bad day, or something else? You know, the cat that was juggling, was it weird because it was a cat? Was it weird because it was juggling or something else? You were playing in the basement with your friends. I heard somebody had their shoes off. Did they have their clothes off, on, or something else? Because somebody who has their pants pulled down to their knees, their clothes are still on to a child. Or they might be off. But if the pants are around the knees, your answer may not tell you anything. Were the clothes on, were the clothes off, or something else? Did they touch you where you go to the bathroom? Did they touch you on your shirt, or something else? And again, they would never ask pointed questions like that, but as parents, if you've already been given bits of information, you know, I was playing with my friends, and I didn't like how this new girl was playing. Was it weird? Was it scary or something else? You know, because sometimes when we say why, kids don't know why. Why did you just take a drink of water? Because you were thirsty, right? Why did you choose that green container over another color? Maybe it was the only one they had. Maybe you didn't care, you just wanted water, and that was a good thing to put water in. Kids don't always know why, and that's why they ask us why all the time. If you can communicate with your kids, you can protect them. My mom and I did a show. It aired last week. And one of the things, now keep in mind, my mom just found out last year that I was raped by the doctor that did my kindergarten exam. My mom was in the room with me. He said, "Why don't you go out and finish up paperwork with the nurses and I'll finish up in here." My mom stepped out of the room. And again, shot, stabbed, or bludgeoned. I'm not going into details. The doctor raped me, adjusted my clothes, and sent me back out. It was just that quick. And I can tell you details of what he did to me even though I was a little kid, even though it's been this long. Why aren't I over it? Because it was traumatic, it should have never happened, and nobody protected me from it. When my kids went to the doctor, I used to go in the office with them the whole time. One of my sons one time had to get a rectal exam to check prostate and hernia is what they were checking on. And when the doctor said what he was going to do, he goes, "Okay, so if you want to step out," and I said, "I'm not stepping out until I talk to my son about what's going to happen, why it needs to happen, and what it is." And I think he was young teenage at the time. And I talked to him about what was going to happen. I talked to him about what the doctor was going to do, why he was going to do it. Was he comfortable with this procedure? Did he want the doctor to do this to make sure of what was going on? And he goes, "Yeah, I know. I've seen stuff like this on TV. It's weird and it's uncomfortable. And yeah, I know what he's doing." I said, "Okay, this is what he's doing, you know." And I said, "Do you want me in here? I will turn my back to you so that I can't see what he's doing, but I'm still right here. Or do you want me to step out?" And he goes, "No, Mom, step out. But stay right outside the door in case I need you." Perfect. I empowered my child to take control of his body. And if he had said, "I don't want to do this," I would have said, "I'm sorry, doctor, but is there another way to check for hernia?" Because guess what? There are. You know. And the things that the doctor said to me when he was raping me were not things that needed to be checked on a five-year-old entering kindergarten.
I have a question.
Sure.
I used to work in college. I worked in the mental health field. And I know that people that were were at the home that it was a rehabilitation
mm-hmm.
home. Like the people who had been assaulted have been assaulted numerous times. Like,
right.
And you have been numerous times. So
right.
Confusing is not the word, but I don't.
How'd they keep getting away with it? Is that what you want to know?
Well, and how? What about that person? Like, do they just look like they might be weak, and that's why people? What is making...
You're a little bit right. It's not the weakness. It's the vulnerability.
Okay.
Okay. I'm trying to think.
I mean, I don't know how to...
Maybe the parenting, because back then, I mean,
old, but
No, it's every generation. Oh. My grandmother was assaulted, and my mom didn't realize it until about 6 months ago when she and I were talking. And I said, well, your mom was sexually assaulted when she grew up, and I'm glad that you... My mom was never sexually assaulted, but I told her, I said, your mom was. And she said, no, she wasn't, and we started talking. And she said, oh, my gosh, yes, she was. And I said, yeah, I knew that. She knew
that. Right, she just used vague enough language that if you don't want to hear it, you can...
Have you...
I have not been sexually assaulted, so okay. I just want to make sure, like, heaven forbid something like that happens. Hopefully we can prevent it. But if something like that were to happen, I don't want my child to continue to be a target. I don't want him to be a target in the first place.
Right.
But say it happens,
how do you stop it?
Because I recall when I worked with people who, when I was working in that field, there was one specific person, I mean, multiple people, mm-hmm. and I don't think she was lying by any means, you know, sometimes,
right.
like, how can one, that happen to one person so many times, but it's almost like they're, not like a target, but something's going on, how do we teach our children to feel strong enough?
You keep the lines of communication open is the biggest thing. You talk to them constantly about everything. My mom knew when I was three, she knew that I was at that babysitter's house. She trusted that babysitter. That babysitter was a wonderful person. And she trusted her teenage son to be in the basement with us kids watching TV. Kids don't fight. Nothing ever happens. There's nothing wrong. They're always quiet down there. They're always good. They always seem to have fun. Nobody was checking on what we were doing, and nobody else was in the room to protect us. There was another little girl in there that was also sexually assaulted. She somehow ended up telling, or something happened, because she was the reason I wasn't allowed to go back to daycare. My brother told me. She's the reason we're not allowed to go back there. Had nothing to do with the fact that I was being raped. She was the reason. So somehow it was disclosed about the abuse for her. She communicated that to her mom somehow. I didn't know to tell. If your whole life you always wear tennis shoes, seeing other people in other shoes doesn't mean anything to you because you're always wearing tennis shoes. That's what you know. That's what you're used to. That's your comfort level. My mom always wore tennis shoes. She always put me in tennis shoes. That's how it was. Well, for me, I was always touched against my will. When I dated guys, they would do things to me against my will, and I thought, yeah, that's just how it goes. Empower your kids by not telling them they have to eat their vegetables. Empower your kids by saying, I can make you this or this for lunch. You know, everybody struggles with what to have for dinner. Hey kids, come here. Do you want fish? Do you want corn dogs? Or something else. They might say, Mom, we really want pizza. That frozen pizza sounds real good. Oh my gosh, moms are like thrilled. That's so much easier than corn dogs. You know, it's unwrap one thing and put it in the oven, not, you know, fiddle with packages and pans. No, it's just one thing and in the oven. You can always offer your kids choices, this, that, or something else. The more you talk to your kids, the more you can protect them from a second assault or a first assault. Again, think about, you know, sales pitch. You know, I really like that red shirt you're wearing today.
Thanks.
It's bright. It kind of makes me happy.
It sure is.
And it's got the City of New York thing. It's supporting the group of people that, you know, I admire.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Do you like the shirt for that reason, or are you just wearing it because it's a shirt?
It was a gift.
It was a gift? Did the person that gave it to you, did it mean something to them, or did they just think you'd like red?
She went to New York and I watched her dog.
Oh, so it was like a gift. It was like a thank you. That's pretty neat. How did you feel when she gave you the shirt? Did you feel like she should have given you money instead?
No.
No? Were you surprised that she got you a shirt?
You know, I gotta go. Nice to meet you.
See ya.
I don't got time for this.
But when you're talking to your kids,
yeah,
ask them more questions.
And I
ran over on my radio slot, so City of Angels is going to have to figure out how to deal with that.
They can trim it.
They can cut out every part where I was talking. Communication's the biggest thing. The show my mom and I did, her biggest regret in life, knowing that I was sexually assaulted while in her care, her biggest regret in life is not talking to me. She found out when I was six, she found out that I was raped by or touched by an uncle that was babysitting me. And his brother beat the bloody crap out of him. Nobody ever talked to me. Not a single person. I didn't even know that he got beat up or that they ever knew. I didn't know that until about 3 years ago. If somebody would have come to me and said, we heard that he did some things that he shouldn't have done, can you tell me about that? I probably would have said, nothing happened, you know, whatever. Oh, my, that's my code that I gotta get on here. Talk to your kids. Stop being the predators. We have our catchphrase is healing starts here. When I tell you ladies that you are the first line of defense to protect your children from sexual assault, that's an awful big responsibility. But what's going to happen if you're not? What if your third line of defense and the other two things you were counting on didn't come through? What if the people you trusted weren't worthy of your trust and you thought, that's my first line of defense, is I trust these people? 98% of kids that are sexually assaulted are by people that they know.
I know it's a, yeah.
And if this helps any, that's only based on what's reported. My every person that I was assaulted by, I knew. And I was told to trust. And my mom trusted her, or I wouldn't have been with them.
And only one of those was reported.
Sort of.
One was reported.
It was a statistic because there were no charges.
Yeah. Well, I was, yeah. No, I was raped by, yeah, okay, never mind. Yeah, only one of them was reported to the police, and the police said, we understand that this is a difficult situation. Now, keep in mind, I was 13 at this time. We understand it's a difficult situation, and this could kill your grandmother. Your mom's going to handle it. We have talked to him. He's not going to touch you again. Have a nice day.
Buggers.
And the thing is, I'll say this quickly and get out of here. And you guys all have my phone number. I am available to meet with you individually so I can listen to what you have to say and answer more specific questions. Please pass on the number. If anybody ever says I was sexually assaulted, say, hey, I met this crazy lady with all this hair. You gotta call her and tell her what you went through, because everything that I'm presenting is what I learned firsthand, what I've learned through other people, and the training that I've taken through the OPATA courses, the rape crisis centers, the different Ohio Attorney General's office training for people that do the interviewing. It's called forensic interviewing of the children. So I know what I'm talking about. I didn't just make this up.
And there's Thursday night support meetings.
Yeah, we have Thursday night
over
support meetings. But the thing is, When the police talked to me about being raped by my grandfather, they were police officers. I had just run away. They were men. I'm 5'2.5". I'm not a big person. This is exactly the size I was at that time when I ran away. I'm not a big person. They intimidated the socks off of me. Did something happen? Did somebody touch you? Do you want to talk to me? You're not going to tell me anything, because I'm intimidating and you might be in trouble, because all I know is something happened and it wasn't right. So I might be in trouble. So, communication.
I do have another question.
Sure.
Is it typical, because you're saying a couple that nothing was specifically said, like they didn't tell you not to tell anyone?
None of them ever did. I take that back. When my grandfather raped me, at one point he said, please don't tell your mom or your grandmother.
Because how do you, if something happens and someone does tell them that, how do you just keep the, I guess, communicate, but to make sure that they feel comfortable enough to tell you, because I have a friend who was abused fairly young by the neighbor, I'm not sure how young, but he said don't, like he, I think he said he'd hurt them.
Right.
And so obviously your child doesn't want you to be hurt. Like
you teach your kids the difference between secrets and surprises.
Okay.
And what I told my kids, and this is one thing that I did write with my kids, if somebody says, I want you to keep a secret, then you have to think about how the person that they don't want to know, how that person's going to react. Okay? If I backed into mom's car and I don't want you to tell, is mom going to be happy that you backed into her car, or is she going to be sad? Okay, that's the difference. If she's going to be sad, you tell. If she's going to be happy, then you don't tell. Surprise versus secret. And they're doing a lot of surprise versus secret with the different domestic violence and things like that. A surprise is when you don't tell because there's going to be a big happy moment. And a secret is when you don't tell because something's not right.
And then empowering that child to know that even if you think it's going to make mommy sad, you're not making mommy sad, and mommy wants to know.
If there's something that you think is going to make me sad, I want you to tell me because I don't want you to be sad for me. I want to be sad for myself.
Or we can be sad together and then we can feel better.
Right. Communication is the key. If ever anyone had ever taken the time to talk with me, and don't think, okay, well, she's 3 years old, she doesn't really understand what happened. My friend was an infant. She couldn't even speak and she knows what happened. So don't ever think that children, you're saying 19 months?
My daughter's 19 months.
They're never too young to understand what's happening to them. Okay? And even at that age, keep the communication going. So I'm going to end the show. I'm going to get out of your way. You guys all have information to contact me if you want, ask questions, refer me on, whatever. You've been listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio, and healing starts here.